Now, to give you an idea, a couple of years back, there was a conference held in Caracas of delegates from occupied factories, about 3,000 delegates from Argentina, Brazil, and many other countries, at which Chavez spoke. And at that meeting, you had meetings between factory delegates discussing deals about, you know, cooperating together, or working together, etc. It actually gave you a little taste of the enormous potential that would exist if Latin America was a socialist federation and the factories were under workers' control and they were using the raw materials and the know-how to the benefit of the people. Last year they had a Pan-American conference in December in the Cipla factory that Alan attended, and a few other comrades went, two comrades from Italy, Spain, Austria attended. At that conference, attended by delegates from different countries of Latin America, they voted the 30-hour week. And they were working since December in the Cipla factory. They had been working a 30-hour week. Not a 35, but a 30-hour week. And the amazing thing is that the productivity was higher on 30 hours than it was under the old boss. And there's obviously a reason for that. You could see, I visited the factory and I could see it. You could see the initiative of the workforce being able to apply all their ability to a project which they feel is theirs. They're doing something which belongs to them. Another little detail. Before they took over the factory, on average in that factory there were 150 accidents a year involving things like fingers being cut. For instance, they showed me one of them. They were making toilet seats, and you see the extrusion when the melted plastic comes down, the mold, the press comes together, and out comes a toilet seat. But it's got some of the plastic on the edge of it, and the worker just runs the knife around it and puts it in with the rest. And things like fingers were being cut off and other things. 150 accidents a year. Under workers' control, they had reduced the number of accidents per year to 5 or 6. And yet productivity had gone up. A little example. I was there just before May Day. And I noticed they were working on a Saturday. And I said, how come you're working on a Saturday? He said, well, we had an agreement. Tuesday's May Day, it's a holiday. So we thought we'd give the workers a 3-day break, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. The Monday is a working day. We decided that we'll do the production for Monday on the Saturday. And the manual workforce, at least, were able to do that. These are all the kind of things that could be done. Now, I was given a tour of this factory a month before the police went in. And it was amazing to observe. You could see the different feel that you had in the factory. The mood was completely different. The way the workers were working, there's just a completely different feel about it. Even the canteen, when I went to it, I could see that there was something different about the way the workers, the respect for the women working in the kitchen, apart from the fact that the quality of the food is better than any canteen I've ever seen in England, but that doesn't really take much to do. I went into one place and I saw a dentist chair, and I said, what dentist? And yes, we have a dentist comes in, does the workers' teeth, a medical center with a qualified staff there, and they were considering the possibility of setting up a nursery in one part of the building. They even had a hairdresser, and I saw her there. She was taking appointments for the women, and she would come in and do the women's hair. I mean, lots of little things like this, but the cleaners, for instance, were on very low wages, and the sheriffs were telling me how they had pictures of the old boss. And they really sort of used to admire the old boss, not the son. They considered, I think it was the son, or the new one, he's a bastard, but the old guy. You know, gradually, he said, the pictures on the, in the lady, where the cleaners had their buckets and stuff and had their tea or coffee break, I suppose, and everything. He said, the pictures changed. It went from the old boss disappeared, and then a picture of Lula went up. And he says, and then gradually that disappeared too. But the PT symbols and stickers are everywhere. Because you've got to understand, the comrades running the factory, and they're the Marxist left of the PT. They are part of the PT, and the workers see them as PT people. And they respect them because they led the factory occupation. Now, I really could, to me, it was a privilege to see that, because it really gave you a concrete example of how a factory can be run by workers. I was taken to the laboratory, which is apparently one of the most advanced laboratories of the plastics industry in Brazil and Latin America. And the workers were extremely proud. They wanted me to show me everything, all the different products they could do. They actually doubled the size of it. There was a room with machines which weren't being used. The workers had cleaned them up and got them working again. I was shown machines, two new machines. The first two new machines in 30 years to come into that factory. And apparently one of the older workers who worked there for 30 years was in tears when this machine was brought in. He said, it's the first time I've seen a new machine being brought in. The old machines that had been repaired, new techniques that had been developed by the workers. The ingenuity of the workers, you could see it at work. Successfully producing and surviving. Now what they were being under pressure for was that the courts had come out against them demanding payment of the debt of the owner. And the response of the leadership of the factory was, the workers are not responsible for the debt, it's the old boss. Get your money off him. He took money off the state, he didn't pay the taxes, he didn't pay the social security, it's his responsibility. And what they agreed was, they were prepared to give 1% of the profits towards the debt. The courts were demanding 5%, which in the conditions the factory was in, meant bankrupting the factory. And the problem the factory had was, it all worked nicely, but they don't have the capital. And that's why the answer is, nationalize the factory in the state run. Well, the workers workers control, but under state control. And then we'd solve our problems. And after all, they were saying, you know, you have to pay the debts. The debts are with the state. It's completely illogical. What it showed was that this state, and unfortunately this government, which was elected by the workers, had no intention of going down that road. Their intention was smash the Occupy Factories movement, because it's a danger. One worker was telling me that after they took over the Cipla and Interfibra in Joinville, since then not one factory has been closed. And he said the reason being that the bosses are worried that if they closed it, the workers would just walk in, occupy it, take it over, and do what they've done in Cipla. And Cipla was a point of reference to the workers in the Joinville labor movement. And therefore, it was a thorn in their side, and they wanted to destroy it. Even though they've shown and demonstrated concretely that they can run the factory, the government and the boss obviously are not interested in that. They want to go on offensive against the workers, and they need to remove this example. And it's interesting that I went there at the end of April, I was there right at the end of April, 1 month later, on the May the 31st, 150 armed federal police, heavily armed, went into the factory, took it over. And prior to that, the chairman of the plastics industry in Brazil made a public statement in which he viciously attacked the occupied factories. And he made a statement saying, he said, it's like you've got a garden, he says, and they come in your garden and take a flower, then they come again and they take some more, then the next thing you'll find, they've come in, they've taken the whole garden, and they take your house, and you can't fight because you didn't do anything to stop them taking that initial flower. So we've got to put an end to this, and enough is enough. And then they attacked Chavez for interfering in the internal affairs of Brazil, because he had a deal with the occupied factories. He was providing the raw materials, which the factory depended on, in exchange for the technology. And they considered that interfering in the internal affairs. You see, the bosses, or the sectarians, don't understand the nature of Chavez, but the bosses do. And it's not by chance that they pinpointed Chavez in their attack, while they attacked the occupied factories in Brazil. When they went into the factory, you can see what they did. The first thing they did was to sack close to 50 workers, the whole of the factory council elected by the workers, and all the left militants. Then there's a court order banning, subsequently they introduced banning any of the factory council from going within 1 kilometre of the factory. If they go 1 kilometre near the factory, they will be arrested. And then they introduced a regime of terror in the factory. After having taken it, they removed the police and replaced it with private armed guards. On every corner now of the factory, every corner of the building, there's an armed guard watching over the workers. And imagine what a radical transformation. I'm just imagining what I saw at the end of April and what it's like now. I said to Serge, this is the counter-revolution. When you talk about counter-revolution in theory, this is the concrete example of it. From complete freedom to elect your leaders and take decisions in assembly and run the factory, 30-hour week, etc., to a police dictatorship inside the factory. And the 30-hour week has been abolished. First 40 hours, now it's a 44-hour week they've imposed on the workers, and they've gone to each individual worker and told them that their job is at risk if they don't sign an agreement saying they agree with the judge's intervention, etc., etc. Really a police regime. Not surprising that the workers have been basically shocked by this and are not reacting. Although the latest news we have is that they've now managed to re-establish contact with about 200 of the 800 workers who will clearly support the old factory council, but they have to go and find them in the neighborhoods. They can't talk to them in the factory. It's like doing underground work in the factory that they were running up until a few weeks ago. They've sacked them, not on the basis of, it's not an economic decision. It's not, well, we've got, too many workers for the job, you know, there's not enough work and therefore we've got a sack, like in a normal situation where a boss would get rid of workers. It just so happens to be the whole of the factory council and all the left militants in the factory. It's clearly a decapitating of the factory, destroy the leadership and then systematically go for each worker. Now there's an international campaign, also in Brazil. They have the support of many unions. For instance, the Sao Paulo bank workers put their printing press at the disposal of the Cipla and Interfibra factories. They've had support from the CUT and other unions, and then there's the international campaign which we took part in. And by the way, comrades, just so that you know, when the comrades went to Brasilia to discuss with the Ministry of Social Security on this question, the minister, amongst other things, was extremely angry with them, because you launch this international campaign and you picket outside 20 embassies around the world, damaging the reputation of Brazil internationally, you know, terrible thing. So it does have an effect. It does have an effect. In this case, not enough to get them to back off, because here they're absolutely determined that they want to destroy this movement. They then moved from the two factories in Joinville to a factory in Sao Paulo, which is the Flasco. It's a smaller factory with about 70 workers. Here, the mood was different. The workers responded by throwing out, it was the same guy that had gone to the Cipla factory imposed by the judge, some kind of, I don't know, I suppose you'd call him some kind of commissar or whatever, that went in to take over in the name of the state. He was thrown out of the factory. The workers went on strike and threatened they would occupy the factory and if they tried to take it over. And there's actually a little video on the internet, if the comrades want to see it, where there's a scuffle and they're throwing him out. He threatened, I'll be back with the army, I'll be back with the federal police, etc., etc. They pulled a nice little nasty trick on the workers. The electricity company, which also had the electricity supply company, had some money owing from the past from this factory, and the workers were negotiating the payments and that. They came in and did some so-called maintenance work, and what they did was they actually put in a system which allows the electricity company to switch off the electricity supply to the factory from outside, because they could never have done it. If they'd have come into the factory sending technicians to cut off, they would never have done it, because the workers wouldn't have allowed it. So they cut off the electricity. It shows you that there's a concerted effort, there's a plan, it's all been planned beforehand to destroy the occupied factories movement with the speeches. A little detail I can give as well. Comrades may have read in the articles from December about the this bishop, not a bishop, a priest, Catholic priest, who spoke in Pan American Conference of Occupied Factories in Cipla, and he quoted the Epistle of St. James. Now I've read quite a lot of the Bible, but I've never actually read the Epistle of St. James. It's a short little thing, and I thought I'll read it. It's only about 5 or 6 pages. And it actually is a remnant of the early Christian days, when the early Christians were actually living as communists. St. James is actually from the early days of Christianity. And that epistle, it condemns the rich because you exploit the worker, you don't pay him enough, blah, 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 blah. And he just read it. Now, it's powerful stuff, and you can imagine the hierarchy of the Catholic Church and the Brazilian bourgeoisie. Here's a Catholic priest using the Bible in a very intelligent way, actually, a bit like James Connolly would quote to the right bits of the Bible, and not attack the Catholic Church head-on when most of the workers you're talking to are Catholics. You use it in a clever way. You put the ordinary Catholics against the hierarchy. And he did that. Now, this priest was up for promotion. He was going to become the next bishop. Well, a few weeks before they attacked the Occupy factories, we found out that his promotion has been cancelled. It shows you also the difference between the ranks of the Catholic Church, which is in close touch with the poor and the working class, and the hierarchy. There's a class division even there. In that week before they attacked, the big speech from the president, the chairman of the plastics industry. And then they go in, massively. And they're not budging on this question. No amount of protest is budging them. Now, the comrades that we're in touch with did say that it's actually, what is amazing is not that they've gone in with 150 armed police, it's that they've done it after 5 years. What's amazing is that this factory, these occupied factories have survived for close to 5 years under workers' control, and they haven't done it before. And they had the perspective that either this movement of occupied factories spreads and becomes part of the generalized movement of the Brazilian working class, or it will unravel the other way. You can't have an island of socialism in a sea of capitalism. And it was quite funny, because I asked, says, how is it possible? Because I said, this is a matter of, this is amazing, it's wonderful to see this. Now, at the back of my mind, I thought, when are they going to hit? And I said to Serge, you know, and he said, ha! Socialism in one country is impossible. Cuba is really in the shit, he said. Well, what about us? He says, one factory. We can't have socialism in Cuba, after all, is the whole country. He said, and we're just one little factory. He said, and if they go for us, we're in deep shit, you know. And he could see the risks that were there. What is amazing is how long it survived. It actually reflects the general mood and the swing in the whole of Latin America, because it's not just Brazil. I attended a conference of occupied factories. They were basically, it's very interesting to observe. It was a one-day conference with delegates, and they were discussing, it wasn't just a general political thing, which was also there, but they were discussing financial issues, economic issues, the actual running of the factory. They were sharing their problems and giving reports to each other of the situation. Present at the conference were two delegates from two occupied factories in Paraguay. I even observed some of the dealings. I mean, these workers, I think one of them was a ceramics factory in Paraguay, and they need to buy a machine. And they'd been given quotes like $70,000. Serge looked around and found the same machine for $24,000. And it obviously was a relief to them, because they're running on a shoestring, but they needed the machine for the factory. So you could see concretely how workers can run things. In Argentina, it's a movement literally of hundreds. In Venezuela, we are leading the occupied factories movement. It's a Latin American phenomenon, and it really is an indication of the degree of the class struggle has reached in Latin America, that such a phenomenon could exist. I would imagine that in the days of Trotsky, this would have been unthinkable that it could last for so long. I mean, really, this level of factory occupations is linked to a movement challenging for power. Now, the power hasn't been challenged for, the leadership isn't there, and of course we find ourselves in this situation. Now, just to finish off, the group that we're in touch with, they're in the process of fusing with us. They have a small group in Venezuela which is in the process of practically fusing with the section in Venezuela. And they're coming to Barcelona, and the relationship with us is very good. And by the way, the pickets that we organized weren't just solidarity with the factories, which is what they were, but it's also a clear message to the group. And they can see, Serge replied that the international campaign for them, he said, was pure oxygen to them. It was like throwing a safety, would you? When somebody was drowning, you throw them a life belt. They could see the nature of our international and the way we move on this question, and I think it's brought them closer to us. Now, they're coming to Barcelona. And in October or thereabouts, there's going to be a congress of the group, and that's where they're going to pose officially the question of affiliating to our international, and they will put it to the IEC in January. I have absolutely no doubt that this group is going to join us. I was surprised at how close we really are. There are obviously differences there. There's a different tradition. But what's amazing is how close they are. And they are working in the PT. They've declared themselves as the Marxist left of the PT. And the Occupy faction, it's actually a very good instrument to use in a movement, because if you want to put a challenge to Lula, if you look here, there's the factories that are occupied. You're in the government. Why don't you nationalise these factories? The possibilities. The answer is quite clear. He's in a coalition with bourgeois parties, and in this coalition, as opposed to the one in the previous legislature, more bourgeois parties have joined. In particular, two parties which were the classic two bourgeois parties of the military dictatorship, which had a kind of sham parliament with two of its parties there. Those two parties now are also in the coalition. So I don't know who else there is left to bring in terms of the representatives of the bourgeois. And it's quite clear that a shift to the right of the government and the balance of forces in the coalition have gone hand in hand with an attack on the occupied factories. It's quite clear that this is what is happening. So this is the position in Brazil. We should keep up the solidarity activity. It has had an effect. The communists were putting up all the messages for the workers to read, to raise their morale and to strengthen their morale. And also, it does have an effect in the thinking of the bourgeois and the way they behave, you know. Because they actually had a warrant to arrest the factory council, and they've not gone ahead with that. I think they probably had this compromise: keep them a kilometre away, but they probably think that to arrest them would be more counterproductive. It would probably achieve less than leaving them out but keeping them away from the factory. So it does play a role. Now, it's a significant group that we're in touch with. They've had this experience of not only occupying but running these factories. And they have also workers, members not just in Joinville, they have them in Sao Paulo and other parts. They have around 200 members. A fortnightly paper, a website, and also important trade union leaders in other sectors. When I was there, there was a shop steward from the Mercedes factory at the conference. There's a comrade, Roque, who's a leader of the railway workers in Sao Paulo. And they've also got students, and they've got links with the peasants. At the conference I attended, there was a leader of the peasants' movement attending. And the black socialist movement, which they've set up, which is fighting this law they're trying to introduce, and they've got a lot of respect for that. They've got black leading comrades, members. One of them will be attending Barcelona, comrade Miranda. So you all have an opportunity to meet these comrades. There's about four or five of them coming to Barcelona. But it is an amazing position that they're in. And it's also an amazing step forward for the international, that we're going into Brazil big time. We're not recruiting two or three people and trying to build up. This is a whole group with a 30-year experience. Comrade Serge is a member of the national executive of the PT, and he has been in the PT since the founding days. He's a founding member of the PT. He said he knows Lula very well. He said he's always been on the right for the movement, even when he was a workers' leader. He's always one of these leaning towards the sort of reformist position right from the beginning. It's not as if he suddenly shifted, although he shifted in terms of the interest that he's defending. So it's a tradition there which we've acquired and which is going to become part of this international. And with it goes the group in Paraguay. They were attending not just for the occupied factories. They're politically interested in the tendency and the international. One of these guys, he's an ex-Communist Party member, is going to organize a conference in Paraguay on the question of the need for a workers' international and a workers' party. And they've got contacts in Uruguay, in Bolivia, and elsewhere. Combining with our work in Mexico and Venezuela and Argentina, etc., we're going to enter Latin America big time with the help of these comrades. I'll leave it there.
Yeah, okay.